In this episode of Pemba On Demand, welcome to Pemba On Demand,
bridging medicine and business,
making a difference.
My guest is Dr.
Norm
Chapin,
Michael,
your host.
Michael
Pemba
is
On
the
Demand
senior
is
medical director
for physician leave
and
med
professional
systems.
Development.
Dr. Marks
we
began
his
a
odyssey
wide
as
an
orthopedic
podcast,
spine surgeon in
including
Connecticut.
Successful innovations.
He has had an amazing career,
healthcare
has many leadership lessons,
current issues
share.
In healthcare, career development, and healthcare leadership.
Well, today our episode of Pemba On Demand is The Physician's Guide to Leadership Careers, Insights from Top Recruiters. My guests today are Catherine Nichols, Executive Recruiter for HCA Healthcare, and Mark Dotson, Director of Physician Executive Recruiting, Jackson Physician Search. So Mark and Catherine, thank you both for joining me on today's show.
Thank you for having us.
So Catherine, maybe you could tell us a little bit about your current role, and what is the role of a recruiter for HCA, for a large company like HCA?
Yeah, happy to. So I cover our chief medical officers and associate chief medical officer recruiting for the organization. So we have about 185 hospitals in 20 states, and so get to help, you know, all of our physician leaders as they progress through their career and getting new talent into the organization. So
it sounds like a fairly big job keeping 180 hospitals populated with CMOs and associate CMOs.
It keeps me busy, but, you know, it's very neat to see the difference that our physician leaders can make in the communities and the hospitals and kind of see the differences in quality that they're able to influence. So,
great.
Yeah.
Mark, how about you? What is your role with Jackson Physician Search?
Yeah, Norm, we are a retained search firm. And so we get hired by clients to come in and help them with some usually very difficult searches for leadership roles. And we get a chance to go out to the customer and visit their site. We get to understand what the unique qualities are they're looking for in their leader, personality of the kind of person they're looking for, and really then get to go to search for who is that next person that's going to step up into that role. We do that for a variety of organizations, from hospitals, academic centers, FQHCs, anybody who has a need that feels like they need some extra resources, we're glad to step in.
Great. And how long have you been in your role with Jackson Physician Search?
I started there almost a year ago.
Okay.
Formerly been doing physician leadership search for about 10 years.
Okay.
And physician recruitment for 22 years.
And Catherine, how about you? How long have you been involved as a recruiter in specifically the healthcare sector?
Yeah, so in the healthcare sector, about 12 years or so, in the physician leadership sector, about a year now, and then did nurse leadership recruiting about 7 years before that.
Okay. Is it more fun recruiting physician leaders or nurse leaders?
Very different in some ways, but similar in others. I think each has their, you know, challenges and, you know, but from a demand perspective, both are in high demand.
Yes.
For sure.
Yes. So. Well, thank you both for the introductions. I thought I'd start with you, Mark, with just a question about what the market looks like right now for physician leaders and physicians who are interested in either changing from one leadership role to another or entering into their first, let's just call it their first formal leadership role, which is going to have some dedicated time where they're expected to do administrative type work within some type of healthcare setting. Is it a good market right now for physicians who are looking to move, or bad?
It is a good market. There seems to be a large demand of customers out there that are looking for good physician leaders. You know, I think part of the thing that Norm that they're looking for in a physician leader is, have they had leadership experience before? Have they managed people? What other experiences do they have as a physician that could bring to the table what they need at that facility or that location as well? There seems to be a growing demand for physician leaders. I think with the changes in healthcare quality initiatives that are out there, the reimbursement models that we're seeing, they really feel like the physician leader is going to be able to drive that within the physician realm, within the medical staff at the different facilities or situations they're in.
Yeah. Yeah. Are you seeing, Catherine, are you seeing any positions for physician leaders? And you're focused right now on CMO and associate CMO positions. Are those positions becoming larger at organizations? Is the role for those leaders changing in any way now during the current market?
I think so. I think, you know, when you think about just the landscape of what Mark mentioned and the changes in healthcare, we are seeing where, you know, the CMOs and the ACMOs are really able to provide that clinical lens and bring that to the table with the rest of the, you know, senior administration team. And so I think when you think about that and the influence that they can have on quality, you know, it is a big demand for it. You know, I know within healthcare, to be able to have that expert that can, you know, influence the quality agenda at the hospitals. Mm-hmm.
What other, and Mark, this is probably a better question for you, because I think that you're kind of doing pretty broad-based recruiting. So what about the biotech industry? We hear a lot about artificial intelligence now. There's always been a large consulting practice around healthcare organizations. Do you have a sense in those specific sectors whether or not the demand for physician leadership is changing at all?
I haven't seen it change as much as it is be consistent in the fact that a lot of these startups or AI technology, they're really looking for more technical expertise. It seems like there is a demand for a physician leader in those positions. And I think it's really evolving around, against the infrastructure of the IT platforms that they're using. You see a lot of investing groups, private equity groups, mm-hmm. looking for physician leaders as they acquire other healthcare facilities or things under their umbrella. Again, to have someone who's seen patients bedside to be able to go out and speak to the other physicians they're transitioning into their organization.
Okay. So. Yeah, I think it'll be interesting to keep an eye, especially on the AI sector of health IT.
For sure.
It's growing so fast, and how they will, we have a lot of experience with EMR companies and other vendors that provide technology solutions to healthcare, but it will be interesting to see how that interplay between AI and clinical physicians penetrates into the marketplace and how much physician leadership is really necessary for a successful implementation of some of those AI tools.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think the AI too, I mean, using that to help support, you know, a clinician or even in hospitals with, you know, surgical cases, and, mm-hmm. you know, scheduling and different things. So I think, you know, even in recruiting, you know, mm-hmm. we're seeing a lot of AI to help, you know, become more efficient, whether it be with some of the administrative tasks,
yes.
recruiting or scheduling of interviews and things like that. So I think even as a physician looking at opportunities, you know, AI is being used mm-hmm. on, mm-hmm. you know, as you're working with organizations and
yeah.
talking to recruiters. And so kind of navigating that landscape.
Great. Great. So you alluded to skills and qualities that physicians need when they're moving into leadership positions. And I think everybody recognizes that the clinical aspect and having good knowledge of quality and clinical medicine is an important skill set to bring to the table. What about some of the other skill sets that physicians are expected to bring into those leadership positions? Could we talk a little bit more about that maybe and kind of take a deeper dive into that?
Sure. I'll start, Kathy, if that's okay with you. Some of the ones that I see, as I maybe alluded to a little bit earlier, is trying to see what involvement physicians have had in their role. I know when we've looked at physician leaders in the past, those who are looking to make that transition should have been involved in some type of leadership within their group, within their hospital.
Committee.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Really lean in on showing some activity and interest in those type of settings. I think the hard one to measure is the emotional intelligence. Well, I believe that's a very strong
yes.
presence in that, is how do they manage people from nurses to physicians and medical staff, and how they interact with the C-suite team as well. And that's a skill set that we ask around. It's just really hard to measure and figure out what that looks like for each individual.
Yeah.
That's a couple that come to my mind.
Yeah, I think specifically when I think in the CMO space, I mean, the emotional intelligence, obviously a huge factor. But you know, the other that kind of plays into that is relationship building. You know, I think they have to, it's necessary for a CMO to be able to build good relationships across, like Mark mentioned, multiple audiences, whether it be with the med staff, the nursing team, the administration. And so I think as a CMO, if you've got that skill set to be able to communicate effectively, you know, explain the whys behind things and really, you know, be visible and, mm-hmm. and getting to know your players and your teams at the hospitals, that's going to take you really far.
It's interesting. I think many physician leaders, maybe not many, maybe that's overstating a little bit, but I've known physician leaders who want to move out of the CMO box and move into a COO position, CEO position. How is that recruiting process different in organizations that you work with that are looking for a physician to lead in a different way or a different area of responsibility?
Yeah, you know, we've seen that over the last several years. Yeah. And I'm sure, Catherine, you're seeing that too in your work. But, you know, a lot of physicians who want to go to that space really come through the medical tract. I think it's really important to understand the why they want to be there in that type of role. The one thing that I have found very interesting in that work norm is that they understand that when you go into that CEO space, do you understand that it may take you out more of your medical space?
Yeah.
And we've seen that happen with a few people, and they realize like, hey, I missed the medical component mm-hmm. of who I am. I'm a physician.
Yeah.
I've done this for years. And so I think that's a little bit of it. The other thing on the recruitment side though is that they have the financial background acumen. I know they get these from the executive MBAs. They have operational knowledge. Are they able to do things that are outside the CMO space mm-hmm. to make them qualify for that CEO role? Some organizations allow that to happen. It's naturally. Some are a little bit more restricted, I think, around the medical side of it.
I think that's a good point. Like if somebody has that desire to kind of go from CMO to COO or CEO, if you have the opportunity to lean in and get more involved in the operations space when you're in that CMO role and, you know, getting really close to your CFO as well, I think is important for CMOs. Mm-hmm. And so kind of learning those other lanes, you know, as you're able to while you're in the CMO role. So then it will help you build on that.
Yeah, I think in my experience, having a good grasp of finance and strategic planning are the two key elements that a physician really has to pick up on in order to be considered for COO. And then in the CEO experience, I think that's an easier hurdle for us to jump over because many physician leaders get so involved in that operational space, trying to do quality improvement and matching your staffing with the demand. I mean, that is a bit of what most physicians get more comfortable with early on as they move into leadership positions.
Yep, for sure. And I think one of the things you were talking about with some of their skill sets is, you know, again, how are they able to listen to, you know, I think listening to your constituents, mm-hmm. maybe the medical staff or other members of your organization, how are they good listeners to make decisions on strategy?
Yeah.
Where are we going to grow and how are we going to grow?
Yeah.
And I think, you know, as a CMO, you're really the voice for your medical staff. And so if you're able to listen and make them feel heard. Now, you know, as a CMO, a lot of times you might not be able to do what they're asking, but, you know, making sure that you're available and listening to them and then bringing those thoughts and voices to the table with the rest of the senior team, mm-hmm. I think, you know, is important for the physician leaders.
It's a very interesting skill set because the medical staff alternates between seeing you as their voice to administration. But then you're also administration's voice to the physicians.
Yeah.
And so depending on what meeting you're in, if I'm sitting at our C-suite meeting, I'm the voice of the physicians to the people who are in that room.
Right.
If I go to a provider's meeting, they see me as the voice of administration when I'm bringing initiatives to them.
We're in the middle.
So it is very important. You talked about emotional intelligence, but I think that listening and communicating is just it is the critical asset, I think, or skill for people who are in these kinds of leadership positions.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think if you know, like Mark said, are looking to do that transition, getting involved as much as you can with any type of leadership you can, starting out early in your career, if you one day want to go down that path, I think it's helpful because it gives you a lot of different experiences and perspectives that you can kind of showcase, you know, down the road.
I think these, Norm, I also think to Catherine's point is as they gain that leadership experience, they start realizing power of we versus the power of me.
Yeah.
A lot of physicians in general are very self-driven.
Yeah.
They're good at going after issues and taking care of it and solving the problem, where when you get into these leadership roles, you start realizing if I start engaging other people to help pull this along, I can get more done with more than just me doing it.
Yeah.
And I think that's where I've seen a lot of physician leaders strive, but also some struggle who haven't figured that out early in their career.
Great. Well, that's been very helpful advice. We're here at the University of Tennessee Physician Executive MBA program. How does getting an executive MBA differentiate a physician from, let's say, a physician who may have had their CV looks exactly the same or their resume looks exactly the same in terms of their leadership experience and opportunities, but one has MBA after their name and one doesn't? What is that? How does that change an organization's perception of the physician, or does it? I guess maybe might be a better question. Let's start with no assumptions.
I mean, I think for me, one of the things when I see that is, you know, it kind of signifies to me that you're open to continuing to learn.
Okay.
And to develop, and, you know, maybe you want growth, but overall you're open to learning new things. I mean, healthcare, as everyone knows, is ever changing, and we all learn something new every day. So I think just this, that perspective, but then also, you know, you've kind of got that desire to learn more about the business side and the operations side and financial and how that affects, you know, everything. So.
Okay.
I would totally agree with what Catherine said. One of the questions I really like to ask Norman, these type of programs, or what got you here? What made you
want to do it in MBA?
Yeah. And that usually is a telling sign of their initiative. To Catherine's point, they knew that they wanted to do something more in medicine, so they took that step either early in their career or later in their career. We've had conversations here today with some executive MBAs that are graduating tomorrow. Great program, but when you also look at putting that on paper to someone who does not have that, you also look at other CEOs too and think, well, if they have an MBA versus not having the MBA, you become more attractive because you've gone through some very hard skill sets of training through the MBA program. You've got more exposure around marketing, finance, operations. And I think it makes you more rounded for that. But when I'm in my experience on physician leadership recruiting, most of the C-suites I have found have some level of higher level education.
Okay. Right. Yeah.
And so now you're stepping up with yours and saying, I've got that too. So it puts you in the room.
Yeah.
Right. To say, I've had that exposure and training, where usually physicians do not get that through medical training in school.
Yeah.
They may have had it in practice, but haven't had a formalized training around it.
Yeah.
You?
No, I agree. Yeah. I think it definitely kind of puts you on that even playing field with the rest of the senior team. And, you know, I mean, if you're a physician and you're also balancing doing an MBA, that's an accomplishment to be proud of. And so I think, you know, it just makes you stand out a little bit.
Okay.
And family.
So when we look at physicians, there are some physicians, as you just mentioned, Mark, who go through the MBA process at a very early point in their career, and other physicians who might do it later in their career. And we've talked a little bit about experience as a differentiator as well. Does an MBA in and of itself guarantee that you will more likely be able to land a leadership position?
Short answer, no. I think it's got to be a combination of in-life experience, you know, at facilities or hospitals, or if it's outpatient, combined with the MBA, you know, being able to get both perspectives. You know, I think from a CMO perspective, makes you more of a favorable candidate versus maybe not having a lot of experience, but having the MBA, or vice versa. I think it's got to be a good balance.
Okay.
And I would agree as well. I think the life experience really comes into play more so. But I think having that MBA then sort of sets itself apart from the same equal time of experience, if you will, in leadership.
Yeah.
Again, seeing that initiative, seeing the learning, seeing the desire to move forward in that space as a leader
Yeah. And I think from, you know, what I've learned a lot of times in a lot of hospitals, for instance, or whatnot, they're facing similar challenges. And so having that life experience that you went through and worked through some of those challenges as a leader, as a physician, I think would help set you up for a CMO position because, you know, you've kind of already crossed some of the hurdles you might run into.
You know, this discussion kind of makes me think about how we need to prepare for the leadership interview. Mm-hmm. What story do we need to tell? So in your experience, what are the things that I've always seen executive recruiters as kind of a coach, right? Because a lot of us, when we're doing this for the first time, we have no idea what we're doing. And so we rely on your expertise to kind of help us through that. So what do you tell physicians, potential leadership candidates about that interview preparation?
Yeah, I think for a big one, it's making sure in your answers to kind of explaining, you know, what happened, what you did with your team, making sure it's a we versus a I, mm-hmm. and then the result, and being able to, during the interview and also on your resume or your CV, to have those examples quantified, you know, and so being very specific in your answers and not rambling. I think that's sometimes where a lot of people get down a path during an interview and have trouble coming back from. And I mean, we were talking about it earlier. It's almost like they talk their way out of the job almost because they just talk too much.
Okay.
So, and maybe not answer the question sometimes.
Yeah.
That was
it happens a lot, it actually. Does. Yeah. And you're like, but you never answered what I asked.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think that's been part of it. I also think that something I've seen over time is some folks really not doing their homework with the organization they're going to interview for, either be a hospital or a clinic or the community. And sometimes when they're in that interview process, the feedback we were getting on the other side was they really didn't know anything about the job, about what they're going to be asked to do. So I think it's important for them to ask questions, either be to us or even to their future employer before they go into an interview. What are you looking for? Tell me, send me the job description. You know, who was in the last role before this role? Why did that not work out? Or what's the change for? I think there's a lot of questions that a physician leadership candidate can ask people like Catherine and I, mm-hmm. or another hiring manager prior to an interview to get a better sense of what the job looks like.
So okay.
They can be better prepared. And then you can also, to your point, ask them, be concise, make sure you answer the question, not go on too long, but maybe even leave some information out to maybe allow for another question to be asked upon that answer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think you made me think about this. You know, sometimes when someone is looking for a particular role, they're looking at a lot of different organizations, understandably so, but, you know, making sure that you remember when you're doing an interview, and this sounds very funny, I know, which organization you're talking to. Because I have had, you know, a candidate go for a facility interview and meeting with a senior team and accidentally said the wrong hospital name. And then that was a major red flag for the senior team of, oh, or are they really truly vested in wanting to mm-hmm. be here? Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, even if you're looking at a lot of different opportunities, do your homework before you go.
Yeah.
You know, on site or have a phone conversation, make sure you know which one.
One of the other questions this made me think of, and I'm, you guys have me really thinking, but coupling this interview question with what we talked about with emotional intelligence, for example, how frequently now are physicians being tested on their emotional intelligence during an interview process or having to do some kind of a personality profile during the interview process?
You know, I've seen less organizations use that recently mm-hmm. than they used to. I know we used to use it at HCA a lot. Organizations I've brought that up to have been less inclined to use that in the interview process. And the reason for that, Norm, that they've given me was they don't want to determine the candidacy based on a DISC profile or some mm-hmm. profile versus what the candidate looks like. So then in the interview process, they may go through that whole interview process, and before they make the offer, they may do an assessment.
Okay.
And if they see some glaring red flags that they didn't catch in the interview process, they may reinvest in asking questions about that, or they may look at that going, yeah, that's what we gathered from that.
I think, you know, I see it some more now, like as just a tool, kind of like a supplement to where, okay, well, this got pulled out from it as maybe we need to dig deeper on the interview of asking questions surrounding this skill or this trait. And so I'm hearing a lot more organizations doing that, you know, versus like, okay, this is exactly who they are, you know, just kind of using it as a supplement.
Yeah.
This podcast is sponsored by the Physician Executive MBA program at the University of Tennessee, Knoxville's Haslam College of Business. In less than one calendar year, this program will equip you with valuable business acumen and leadership development not found in traditional medical school curriculum. Are you ready to join the longest-running physician-only MBA program in the country and a network of nearly 1,000 PEMBA graduates? Visit tiny.utk.edu/podcast for information about this exciting opportunity. And now we'll return to the episode.
How do you think organizations are, if they're not using the DISC profiles or some type of an analytical assessment, a lot of organizations still talk about hiring for fit as a key strategy in finding the right person. Less so about, I mean, hire for fit, train people to do the job the way you need to have it done. Is that still the mantra that you're hearing with executive recruiting?
It is for me. And I feel like they do it in a couple of different ways. I think one, they, for the ones who are doing it, do it well, or really try to set up this person that's interviewing with multiple people, have different sets of questions that come to that person and try to get a reaction from everyone who has interviewed that person.
Okay.
And I think that's helped them establish more of the fit, if you will. The other thing that you mentioned earlier, the thing I'm seeing more of is the situation or behavioral-based questioning.
Yes.
I think we're getting a lot more of that. And they really do, most people do a good job of saying, hey, Catherine, you ask these questions, I'll ask these questions. And sometimes it's duplicate questions. So I think people have to be aware that interview processes can also have duplication to see how you answer the question in two different scenarios and two different people.
Yes.
Yeah, I think so too. And I think, you know, when you think about that hiring for fit, it might not be just fit for the role, but fit for the situation. Because, you know, I see a lot of times, you know, maybe a hospital is at a certain stage and going through certain challenges, and then another hospital is at a different stage. And so what might be the right leadership skills and style at, you know, hospital A might not be for B. And so sometimes, you know, I think, you know, just being patient in the process, because, you know, sometimes it truly is a big puzzle and trying to figure out where you're going to be the best, you know, with the best team that fits where you're at in your leadership.
Okay.
So
another thing that's brought up is I was talking about resumes, but when I started applying for positions and they talked about a resume versus a curriculum vitae, I wasn't quite sure if it was the same thing or a different thing. What is the difference between a resume and a CV? And what do you recommend the physician come to the interview with or start the application process with?
Yeah, on a physician leader side, I would say the resume is the important document.
Okay.
And the difference, I had it explained to me by a physician leader several years ago, was the CV is what the resume is what I've done for someone else.
Okay.
And the other thing that I've seen some varying thought processes on is how long should a resume be? I know I've worked with a couple of other educational universities who try to keep it within a page.
Okay.
That's usually really hard for a physician to do.
Yeah.
I think usually with your training alone, it will cover a page. But I think 2 to 3 pages should be a good guide on that. Once you get past 3 pages, you really have to start thinking, are the other 2 pages worthy of what I need to do? You should be able to fit it into 3, I think. Whereas the CV, I will say though, Norm, I always tell people, always keep the CV handy. Because if that job is clinical at all, they're still going to want to see your clinical CV along with your resume. But the resume for a physician leadership, in my opinion, is the
document. I agree. And I think a lot of times, you know, when I'm looking for a physician leader, not saying that the publication work and, you know, things that you've done in research and things like that aren't important, because obviously they are. But when it comes to a CMO role, I feel like you can leave that off. Like, you know, I'm really looking to see what leadership you did, you know, and make sure that everything makes sense, like from a chronological perspective, transitioning of roles, you know, and that there's a good flow to your career after residency and then beyond into leadership. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think that for me, when I think of it, I'm like, okay, more the CV is showcasing some of the publications and the clinical.
Gotcha.
I also think sometimes physicians, as they go through the executive MBA programs, get better education around this than others, is what you should highlight in your resume. To your point, you really want to see someone who's, I worked at this location in this role. What are some of the measurable? Sometimes I see physician resumes who will talk vaguely about some accomplishments, but they don't have any specific measurements.
Yeah.
And I think that's really important. And you're not looking for an explanation of how you got there. You just want to say that you got there as a team, as you were talking about earlier. But that's something that always gets pulled out in the interview process. Then you can talk about those things.
Yeah. Okay.
And I think sometimes the resume goes underrated. And as a recruiter, it's very important because, I mean, I think about some of us, I mean, we're looking at hundreds of resumes a day. And unfortunately, I wish I was Superwoman and could do it a lot, you know, but sometimes we only have 90 seconds or whatnot to quickly scroll through it. And so just having it formatted very easily, you know, to see and pull out of it, I think is very helpful and sometimes overlooked of how important it is to get to that next step.
So go ahead, Mark.
Norm, I was just going to add, I think what Catherine touched on something. Sometimes I think you get some resume writers that will really dress up your resume. A couple of things I think there is sometimes I think there's a little bit too much in that. But also I think to Catherine's point earlier in this conversation, a lot of the AI technology can't pick up a lot of the information that's in there. So if you're trying to say, does this resume have this, AI will not pick it up.
Okay.
Therefore, it doesn't look like that candidate may be qualified and they would be. But then you pick up the resume and you're like, man, it's real busy. It's colorful. It looks good. But is it easy to read? Does it have a good flow? Mm-hmm. Do the dates match up? I think sometimes I was reading one the other day and there was a year of something left off. And I'm like, oh, I was doing fellowship year or research year or whatever. You got to make sure all your dates connect.
Yeah.
And if you don't, that's one that you could put to be discussed so that we can have that conversation, like a leave of absence or a medical issue.
Yeah.
But I think the importance of the detail in the resume is very important.
That's great advice. What do you tell your candidates about individualizing a resume for specific positions? Let's say you're working with someone who's going for three different positions in different organizations or different HCA hospitals. Do they present the same resume or do they personalize it, or what parts of the resume get changed to fit a specific position?
I don't know. You know, I think if you're looking at different hospitals and you know that hospital is, for instance, a huge transplant hospital, or, you know, you've got a lot of experience in transplants, maybe adding in some of that because I think it will help stand out to the hiring manager. You know, but at the same time, I don't think you have to really change too much, you know, for different hospitals if it's the same role. I think when you're looking at different roles, that comes into play more. Mm-hmm. And I always suggest looking at the job posting, pulling out certain words from that you can also use in your resume. But yeah, I think for the hospitals, you know, if you could showcase something, it's helpful, but not necessarily. I mean, for me, I'm just looking in general, like, okay, do you have what we need for a CMO anywhere?
Gotcha.
So. Yeah, I would agree as well. I think the a couple of things I've seen people try to focus a little bit more time and effort on that seems important, but from a Catherine standpoint, my standpoint, it may not mean as much. Sometimes I think some people may focus a lot of time on their objective statement. And I don't know that that could be changed a little bit to fit the job, yeah. But I wouldn't put a lot of time and effort in making
okay.
it a half
I feel
page.
Like some people don't even read the objective statement anymore. Hmm. So I feel like that is something that almost could hurt you more than it could help you.
Agree.
But I think really that the bullets under your current and previous jobs, that's where you need okay. to spend
great.
Your time. And, you know, for me, and I don't know your thoughts on this, Mark, but sometimes I'll see where they have like the first page. It's just almost a cover letter with their name and everything. I just want to get right to it. Like, you know, versus scrolling or like I've seen some that have pictures on there. Personally, I would veer away from that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, because we're just looking for the information.
Gotcha.
And the same with the cover page. I will say I tend to not read them. But what I do tell people is that if it's important enough for you to put it in the cover letter, make sure it's important enough to put in your resume.
Because gotcha.
That resume is what lives through the process of an interview.
Right.
Where the cover letter, for the most part,
it might. It may fade away and not mm-hmm. make it through all
okay.
the emails.
Yeah. Or yeah. attach it so that the resume is embedded in it.
Sure.
But I also understand don't focus too much time there to give away
okay.
a lot of information, if that makes sense.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah.
So a lot of physicians are looking for jobs right now in different social media venues, mm-hmm. LinkedIn, Facebook to a certain extent, Facebook groups. Mm-hmm. I've had applicants come to me in some ways that I would have never thought of 10 years ago. So what are your thoughts of connecting with employers, recruiters on those kind of social media platforms? Do you have a preferential platform that seems to work best? Do you recommend avoiding that entirely? How does that work in your experience?
Yeah, I think LinkedIn is definitely like the preferred on connecting, similar to physicians and everybody else probably, like there are so many ways to connect with someone and we're all checking so many different devices and systems, whether it be an applicant system and then your LinkedIn and messaging. And, you know, so if you can kind of just pick to the top ones versus contacting in all the different ways, I think it's helpful sometimes because we're trying to balance the different modes of communication. But I think it is very important to make sure you have your personal brand, whether you realize it or not, you know. And so what you put on Facebook or Instagram, even if it's not work related, it is out there, you know. I think just be really careful about that because anybody can do just a Google search and, you know, and so just making sure to maintain, if you are in the job market, your brand. I think that also shows emotional intelligence as well.
It does. And I would go to what Catherine said. I would recommend everybody do a Google search on themselves
mm-hmm.
and see what's out there, what pops up first. Because there's some things when you talk to a physician leader, first thing I'll do is do a search, you know, and I'll put in their name and, you know, you get a lot of things that you normally would see where they're working at and quality things, but there's some things that sometimes will pop up if there's outstanding settled lawsuits or pending litigation, you'll find those things on there. And that's something that I think, you know, to that point as well, because it's out there, you should be able to talk to it. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not that these things do not happen.
Right.
But
just being honest and upfront
right.
about it.
Right.
Yeah.
And you want to make sure that's there. I would also go along with what Catherine said LinkedIn's a preferred portal of communication for folks.
Mm-hmm.
But I've spoken to some folks here this morning, would also say that's a good way to connect with people, but also make sure that profile is updated. Make sure you have that polished down to the way you want anyone to see it. Because
mm-hmm.
I know in my past and present, if I send a candidate over, the first thing people are doing is Google searching them and LinkedIn searching them.
Yeah.
See their profile pictures. They want to make sure everything looks the same and are together.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
To your point.
Okay.
I think being persistent too. I mean, honestly.
Absolutely.
Because sometimes it is juggling all, like I mentioned, the different modes of communication. And so if you don't
yeah.
hear back right away, you know, follow up, like, you know, maybe don't take it personally right away, but, you know, just continuing to check in and maintain that relationship.
Well, this is something I thought was interesting. And when you said that earlier, too, I meant to mention is that, you know, as a physician leadership candidate, if you've got a position that you've talked to them on and you're interested in, and they invite you to an on-site interview, you need to try to be readily available. I've had some folks that have said, oh, I'm not available for 2.5-3 months. That doesn't show interest.
Yeah.
And so they need to make sure that if you're going through that process, you can figure out how to work your schedule to make it work.
Yeah.
But I also think that point, if I'm reaching out to a physician leadership candidate and I text them and message them or whatever, and they don't get back to me for a week or so, I start believing they've lost interest.
Yeah.
And I know the client has. And so having that consistent communication, and text is great, by the way. I think people are able to say, hey, I'm in clinic today. I'll call you on Friday. Great.
Right.
At least you have some feedback. But having a personal connection where you can is important.
I think if you're going on site to interview, and it sounds elementary, but really researching the area, you know, making sure that you are, I mean, obviously, if you haven't seen the community, you know, there's going to be some, you know, fact finding when you're at the visit, but really just making sure that you, and if you've got a family that's moving with you, that somewhere y'all want to be, you know, and doing your homework on the front end, you know, if you can bring a family member on the visit to see the area versus having to, you know, okay, there's an interest both ways, but then we're going to prolong it because you got to come back. You know, I think sometimes just doing it all at once and doing your research is helpful.
And speaking of social media, one of the things I've seen over the recent years, people bring up, Norm, that they've looked at and try to give you some feedback on is Glassdoor. You know, a lot of people go in and put reviews on Glassdoor. And even physician leaders looking at Glassdoor for compensation surveys. And I'd be cautious of that because, again, every organization we found has different compensation models and structures.
Right.
Some might be higher in base, but they might not get the bonus they expect. Some may have lower base, they may get stock equity. They may get more better bonus structures. And so sometimes I think the social media element is good for communicating, but it could also lend itself to false information that's out there. If you look at too many things that, you know, may not bring the best light for, because as we know, when you go to a restaurant and you have great service, some of them have a bell you can ring on the way out. But if you have bad service, more people will talk about that.
Yeah, so absolutely.
Just be cautious there on the social media platforms.
Yeah, that's great advice. I want to pivot a little bit now. So I've gotten a job working with you. I'm moving into a new physician executive role. And I know it's important for you to make sure that you match the candidate with the right position for them. And I know that you follow up, you look at retention, how long that executive stays in the role. Mm-hmm. What do you find are the most critical things in that first 90 or 120 days that really sort of lock that person into the role for the long haul?
I will say that I've seen organizations who have a good onboarding policy really do well with that. And it could mean the first week they're shadowing somebody for that full week. And then they also have a plan of this is what we want to see accomplished by 30 days, 60 and 90, 120, whatever the case may be. And they also have people set up as mentors and communication contacts for them. I know, and I'm not a physician leader in this sense, but I know when I started with my organization, they had an IT contact that was dedicated to me for 2 or 3 weeks. And that was fabulous because I had some IT awareness
issues.
Yeah, it was user error, by the way. But I needed someone to contact to get it resolved, and they did.
Yeah.
But I think having a good onboarding plan will help that because I think if someone comes out of the gate without that, they could really get lost and frustrated early, and it's hard to turn back from that.
Yeah.
That's what I've seen.
I think the onboarding plan is 100%, you know, making sure that you're asking questions about that before joining the organization. What do they have? Orientation. Do they have like a ongoing development program for whatever position you're going to be in? And I think really in the first 90 days too, you know, you're drinking from a fire hose a lot of times and you're hitting the ground running sometimes. And so you're not going to, you know the organization and just being patient with that, but learning who you can call and what resources might be available. And it, even if you don't know what the resource is, like finding who you can go to find out where you can get the information you need, and really find a peer, you know, that you can partner up with, and that can kind of be, you know, when you're having a frustrating day or you're going through a challenging situation, that you can call and whether it be vent to or learn from. So I think having a mentor and a peer as kind of your go-to is really important.
I think if you can find, maybe even to that point, if you're bringing someone in from outside the community, if you can find a family that has some similarities in kids' age, schools, activities, background, specialty, to match them up with is helpful. I think sometimes the challenge for onboarding may be, you know, maybe the physician's getting onboarded well, but if a challenge for the onboarding for the spouse or the family into the community might be the hard part. And so if that's not going well, they're going to be frustrated with work as well. And so I think making sure you look at the whole family aspect of it versus just the candidate physician leader in that onboarding process.
And I think remembering, like, you know, organizations want you to succeed. You know, they've put a lot of time and effort even before your start date to to find the right person and get you there. And the last thing we or the organization wants is to have to be doing it again relatively soon. And so if you feel like you're overloaded or having challenges, you know, speaking up and reaching out to somebody to get what you need sooner rather than later.
Yeah, I think that there's a, that's good advice. I think that the sense is, and I've seen this with a lot of new hires coming into any position, whether it's just a clinical position, they get a sense that they're being rated on how few questions they have to ask, how little clarification they need, because there's almost this misunderstanding that, well, we've hired you, you're a great person, now get in there and do it, and we don't expect you to have any confusion. And I think being very clear that it's okay to go through that process and that you will have questions. Like you say, you're drinking from a fire hose. We know you're not going to sit through your IT orientation and remember how to use every facet of our EMR. Don't struggle with that, reach out for help. I think that's an important thing that, and that is part of, I think, a good onboarding process is the person walks away from that knowing that they have permission to get more information. So that's great. Well, we're kind of getting to the end of our hour here. This has been great conversation. I just wonder if there's a piece of final advice that you find useful for physicians who are completing an executive MBA or are looking just to move into a physician leadership role that you found to be really meaningful for them as they go through this search process or transition.
Yeah, for me, I believe it's talking to the physician, really having them dive into what do I really want to do? What's my next career path look like? Because it is usually for most physician leaders, is when they take on the administrative role, they're leaving clinical behind to some degree. And so what do you want to see yourself doing? I know this, but what do you see yourself doing in 5 or 10 years? Sometimes it can be cliche, but it really is. Where do you want to see yourself in 5 or 10 years? And if it's the CEO role, then make sure you put yourself in positions that are getting you the experience you need to get to that role. You know, you're not going to get hired as a CEO if you've just been a clinical physician, no leadership, and you got an MBA. You're going to have to get the different experiences to get there. And I'd also add to that, sometimes with physician leaders, you know, as they sometimes look at new opportunities, make sure you know where the fork in the road's at, because sometimes the Yogi Berra would say, take the fork in the road, but sometimes that fork in the road may not be the path you want to be on. So it could be, to your point earlier, it could be going down a consulting pathway or an insurance company background, but you really want to be in the hospital setting at the end of the, you know, in 10 years. Sometimes those experiences can help you, but sometimes they can hurt you as well.
Sometimes once you go down that path, it's hard to get back on the other path. Like if you've gone down an insurance path and then all of a sudden you wake up and it's 5 years later and all your experience is in you know, the provider side and you want to go back, sometimes that can be tricky. So I think, you know, thinking about that as your
How about for you, Catherine? Anything besides that that you would find helpful for me if I was just completing my MBA?
Yeah, I think don't be too rushed for the next step. So really live into the position you're currently in, doing, you know, getting all the knowledge and everything you can from that. I mean, obviously, wanting growth and development is a very good thing, but making sure that you're getting what you need before looking beyond. You know, sometimes I'll find people that they're always thinking about the next step a little too soon. And so that's just something, you know, some advice, like, you know, if you're getting your MBA, what do you want to do? Okay. What are you currently doing and how you're going to get there? But don't think five steps ahead.
Okay.
So.
Great.
And Norm, I would even add to that, because Catherine's spot on with that answer. I think adding to that, making sure you understand sort of what the career ladder would look like. So put yourself as a position leader in an interview process and say, if I was the candidate presenting myself to me, would I think this person's ready for that type of position based on their experience and their resume and everything else? And understand that a little bit, because sometimes I've seen position leaders come out and love their ambition, love their their tenacity,
eagerness. Yeah.
But sometimes you want to overstep your skill sets a little bit. And I fear for that for them, because you want to make sure you learn everything you can to be successful. Yes, I've seen some jump over those hurdles, get a big position, and be so overwhelmed they weren't successful. And it's really frustrating, because it's like, what did I do? But I think you got to find the right fit. You got to find the right community, right support system. But don't look at the money aspect of it either. And sometimes even the title, I think you got to find a role that fits you as a person and make sure it's on your career path trajectory.
Right.
I think too, in an interview, you know, you again want to come across as eager and, you know, that you're goal oriented. But if you come across too much like that, then it can hurt you, because sometimes, you know, they might need somebody that stays in their role 2 years. And, you know, I've had people where they're like, oh, well, in the interview, we think that they will jump or want to, you know, get frustrated that they haven't yet and then leave. And so, you know, I think just being within what you're doing and making sure you really like it.
Yeah, be mindful of where you want to go next.
Yeah.
You know, take your time. Be successful at what you're doing. You're already successful if you completed this executive MBA and you're a physician, in my opinion. But there are steps along the way to look at. And again, I think looking at how would I view myself if I was a physician at the facility and this person was interviewing for me, but I think they're ready based on their resume. And that helps the resume piece a little bit as well.
Yeah, great. Well, thank you both for joining me today.
Thank
I appreciated you.
You
taking the time out of your schedule down here in Knoxville to record the podcast.
I hope you enjoyed the Physician's Guide to Leadership Careers, Insights from Top Recruiters. Mark and Catherine gave us some excellent tips and advice for physician leaders looking for a formal leadership role. I have placed some pertinent links in the show notes, including links to both Mark and Catherine's LinkedIn pages, Jackson Physician Search webpage, the HCA webpage, University of Tennessee Physician Executive MBA Program webpage, and a link to my LinkedIn webpage as well. I've also included a document that you can download or access, the Top 10 Tips for a Successful Job Search. Thank you very much for joining us today. I hope that you find this information helps you become an even greater force for good in healthcare.
Pemba On Demand is released biweekly, every other Thursday, and available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Castos, or Overcast. Please subscribe to the podcast on your favorite podcast player by clicking the subscribe button. Add Pemba On Demand to your podcast library today. I would also appreciate it if you could share the podcast with your friends or colleagues. You can also listen to our podcasts on our YouTube channel, www.youtube.com/@PembaOn-demand, all one word, no spaces. Please hit the like button and subscribe.
Also, if you have any comments or questions regarding this or other episodes, please feel free to add them into the comment section on our YouTube channel. We love hearing from you and are happy to answer any questions you may have. I will add a link to our website and our YouTube channel in the show notes. The website is tiny.utk.edu/PembaOnDemand, all one word. There's no hyphen in that URL. You will find the links to the episodes there. Please also check the show notes for links that were discussed in the show today. Take good care of yourselves and become an even bigger force for good in healthcare.